Good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning. You are listening to Jump in Tucson. That was Matt Neely bringing us in with his smooth waxing, and I love, Matt, the whole election series that's currently going on.
Aren't those great, Greg? Greg Gehringer did those.
They are phenomenal. I mean, you talk about throwing, especially for those of us who are around during a lot of those times, throwing that back is a huge thing. And it's a reminder, really, for what the purpose of our program is. And that is we're trying to get everyone to get engaged, to jump in, as we like to say. But it's important. It's important for us to be educated on our election process, educated on our candidates and our ballots, and then getting involved and making sure that we show up and vote. So I strongly encourage that. But there's a lot of ways to get involved. There's ways to get involved in your community, through nonprofits, through service, either to the country or to your region, first responders, educators, all those folks serve. And today I'm very honored to have with me CJ Karamarjan, which I always butcher that name, so I'm hoping to get through this entire show in one shot. CJ is the senior advisor for Congressional District 6 Congressman Juan Ciscomani. But as with everything, CJ, you heard me already lead in, this is about getting people to be involved and getting people to understand the different ways to be involved. And before you got into politics, and we will get to politics, we'll probably talk a little bit about elections and the challenges and changes you've seen over your time, you had a lot more in your background. So I'd love for you to take a couple minutes to point about where you grew up and those kind of things, and then we'll get into your first adventures after college.
Okay. Well, thanks, Ted. First of all, it's an honor to be here. I listened to your show, and you've had some great guests, great discussion. So there's a high bar for me to live up to.
Oh, I'm sure you're gonna hit it. So
I don't know about that, but let's hope. So let's see. My background: from Connecticut. Originally, southeastern Connecticut. My father was a public school teacher. My mother was an Avon lady and a dance instructor. We grew up, my sister and I, in a small little town. It was sort of like a New England version of Mayberry. We had great schools, great teachers, which I didn't take full advantage of at the time. I was distracted by too many things. But it was a childhood where we looked forward to June when school let out. We took our bikes 3-4 miles to the beach, and we stayed there essentially until September, until school began again. It was a great place to grow up. But I grew up in a house where news and politics was very important, and thanks to my mom, music also. I think my dad was on the cerebral side, sort of an intellectual, very much into history and politics, and my mom was a people person who could get along with anybody. You could put her into a room with 10 people, and 9 of them would emerge as her friend, and one of them would probably be her best friend. And she was an optimist. So I like to think I inherited the best of both sides. Southeastern Connecticut was a military community. We had a U.S. Naval submarine base there. The Coast Guard Academy was in New London, and the General Electric Shipyard. At the shipyard, they made nuclear-powered submarines, including the first nuclear-powered submarine, the USS Nautilus. My grandfather, a Greek immigrant, was a janitor at the Electric Boat Shipyard. And of course, I had no way of knowing at the time, but I would end up working for members of Congress who were responsible for the budget for that shipyard that was just across the Thames River. It was a great sort of like circle. But as I alluded to, I wasn't the best student in high school. Much to the disappointment of my dad, who was an English teacher, I actually, and somewhat ironically, did not get my high school diploma because I failed English.
That must have gone over real well around the dinner table.
It was awful. And it's also sort of ironic because I went into journalism where language was...
Absolutely. Now, your dad didn't fail you. For the record, he wasn't the one that failed.
Correct. He, okay. he was a teacher in a neighboring town. But he did let me know how disappointed he was. So as a result of not getting my high school diploma because I failed English, I had to go to a community college to get that credit so I could go back, get my life together, as my dad said, and get my high school diploma, get on with my life, get on the right track. When I went to the community college, I had a choice of taking a poetry class, some English literature class, or a journalism class. And I made sort of a fateful decision. A friend of mine was in the journalism class, so I wanted to be with my friend. I took I took the journalism class, and that put me on a path that essentially led to my 14-year career in journalism, and to, you know, where I am today, really. The idea of telling people's stories has always fascinated me. You know, one of the great things about working for Juan Sescamani is he says all the time that he's in the people business. We are in the people business. And he tells stories. He talks about his personal story. He talks about the importance of other people's stories, especially in the context of the American dream. That aspect, I think, bridges journalism and politics. The idea of conveying a story. You can really transport people, move people, get things done with an effective story. You and I, before we went on the air, were talking about Ronald Reagan's speech at the 40th anniversary of D-Day. Listen to that speech today, as I did this morning, as we approach the D-Day anniversary, and you are transported back by a man who understood the power of a story. So, community college, journalism, University of Connecticut, tried grad school, wasn't really cut out for the academic stuff.
That might be a good move in the long run. Sometimes you get into that continual education piece and then you stay in that system. And I think your career outside that system has been much more expansive. So I love part of this show, CJ, what I love is hearing everybody's story, because I just learned more about you than, you know, outside of your workplace and your growing up and everything than I have in the past. And I think if people listen to the story you just told, they'll know that what you are coming out of high school isn't what you're going to necessarily
exactly.
be. And the community college, I want to be on that, as Pima Community College is in the process of hiring a new chancellor, plays an incredibly important role for folks who have a ton of potential to succeed.
Right. You're totally right. And Congressman Sescamani talks about this all the time, because Pima Community College gave him that opportunity. He tells a very...
I didn't even think about that one, but
right.
yes.
He tells a
exactly.
very compelling story about how he got that Mercy Scholarship to Pima Community College, and it changed the trajectory of his life, the same way going to Mitchell College, the community college I went to, changed the trajectory of my life. It just goes to show, I think, Ted, that you can't always predict what's going to happen or why it happened, or why it happens. If my friend wasn't in that journalism class and I took that poetry class, who knows what would have happened?
That might be a little scary, but we'll talk about that on after the break here. Perfect lead-in. That's the background of CJ Caramargian, the senior advisor for Congressman Juan Sescamani. I'm Ted Maxwell. You're listening to KVOI 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk. Welcome back, Tucson. You're listening to Jump In Tucson, and specifically the Engagement Hour. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. My guest today is senior advisor for Congressman Juan Sescamani, CJ Caramargian. We're working on that. He actually told me how to pronounce it in Greek when we were off the air, and I'm not even going to try that. That would be an absolute train wreck. Great opening. I love the
Thank
conversation,
you.
And you know, I'm glad that stuff that you hadn't thought about over time all came back into it. The selection of journalism over poetry, I think probably
faithful,
and was, and as I understand, after University of Connecticut, that's where you went. You went into journalism.
Correct. So my grandparents moved to Tucson about a little over 50 years ago, and slowly the family came here. And I wanted to get a job at the Arizona Daily Star, the Tucson Citizen, and I had absolutely no experience, and I couldn't figure out why on earth they wouldn't hire me. So I had to go off and get some experience, and I responded to a classified ad in the Salt Lake Tribune for a weekly newspaper in Ketchum, Sun Valley, Idaho, and that too ended up being a life-altering experience.
And it's ironic, a classified ad, that'd be like just responding to an Indeed ad right now, and those and it's they're sometimes real big long shots, but off to beautiful Sun Valley in Ketchum, Idaho,
the Sawtooth Mountains. I had no idea what Idaho was. I started in October. By November the snow started and it wouldn't stop for months, but it ended up being a fantastic experience. A scrappy weekly newspaper, believe it or not. The Wood River Valley, where Ketchum Sun Valley is located, had two competing newspapers. We attempted to go up against each other with news, advertising. The paper I worked for, the Wood River Journal, ended up closing years later. I'm sure my departure.
It was after you left, right? That right. was the downfall.
Right. But it was fun. It was a blast. We covered school board meetings, airport board meetings, city council meetings, and the occasional celebrity.
Well, the beauty of that, before we get into the celebrity story, if you want to tell it, is all those boards that you covered, those are all community members being involved and engaged and making a difference.
Right. And like in our community here, people are involved, people are engaged. And those school board meetings, those planning and zoning meetings, they were full of some passionate opinions when people wanted to build something or change a curriculum or allow bigger planes to fly into the tiny little airport in Haley. But people were engaged in that community, and it sort of reaffirmed my belief in my career choice. I can remember standing in a newspaper checkout line once, and the two people in front of me were having a conversation. One of them said something essentially like, "Hey, did you see that story in the Wood River Journal about what the council did two nights ago?" And I'm thinking, that's my story. And I was telling them information that they needed to be engaged as a reporter. And that's the great thing about newspapers. And of course, newspapers have changed dramatically since then, the 90s. But it was an essential way to get people engaged and to inform them about things. In my mind, Ted, I can remember as a kid going to Elkhorn Mall with my Nana, and she loved department stores. And department stores were these huge emporiums where they ordered everything. There was the shoe department, the ladies' department, the toy department. Newspapers did that for our world. There was, you know, the news, the local news, the world news, sports news, business news. And then, as you alluded, the archaic classified ads. But it ordered the universe. And they still are. To some extent, nowhere near they once were, forums where people exchange ideas and debate things. Look at what's happening right now in the Arizona Daily Star, a paper which I ultimately went to work for. The discussion over who's going to be the best Pima County attorney. Here you have a real debate going on between the former Pima County attorney, Barbara LaWall, a former Pima County Supervisor Sharon Bronson, using that forum to talk about who they think is the appropriate candidate. And then you have the incumbent, Laura Conover, her supporters using it. So it is a place, an arena where people can meet.
And the best part about it, because you mentioned that was your first time that you realized, wow, I'm informing these people on information they need to know. And I understand that there's some people that don't like the Daily Star's slant as they see it, but you can hear both stories in it. There was an op-ed Sunday that was anti-Copper World. There was an op-ed Monday that I published, that I wrote regarding South 32's Hermosa Project.
And the critical minerals.
And the critical minerals. So you get two different sides of the same topic. I will openly acknowledge I read the Daily Star every day, and I read the Arizona Central, or the Arizona Republic, as often as I can in the morning. And that's just for that reason, to get the local tone and flavor, and you're going to have to, filter out the rest of it. But you don't get that online. Online, you get what you find. Here, the paper still can serve that role.
It can, and it does. And I think it is a fundamental prerequisite to getting involved, to engaging in your communities. Get the information from somewhere. Know what you're talking about. If there's an issue that you're passionate about, there are so many ways to delve in, to jump in. But certainly the daily newspaper of our community is one of them. Tucson was fortunate. It once had two competing newspapers. I worked for both. That's also a thing of the past. But still, there's no one perfect way.
And I'd say you've still, through the Tucson Sentinel, through the Tucson Agenda, you still have to find those competing voices now. I do think the Star, and you see it in the letters to the editor, and seems like the number one complaint is from both sides, saying the other side gets too much press. But the fact of the matter is you can get things in there.
Right.
And I think that's good. So I'm going to run through, you've obviously started in Idaho, and I'll tell you the end story of his celebrity thing is Bruce Willis will never be on the CJ fan club leader. So that's just, we'll leave it at that and we'll tell the story. But then you also went to Massachusetts.
Correct.
You were in D.C.
Right.
And then you finally got to come back to Tucson. And you did. You worked as assistant city editor in Tucson Citizen. And then you were in a higher position on the Arizona Daily Star.
Right. I started at the Citizen as a project reporter.
Okay.
The bigger projects. And it was a great, like the Wood River Journal, it was the scrappy underdog. It was the afternoon paper now, which is considered almost archaic, an afternoon paper. And we had a great team, including some of the folks that are still involved. Blake Morlock, a great writer, is now a columnist for the Tucson Sentinel. Don't always agree with him, but he knows how to tell a good story. He's a very good writer. Someone else I worked with, C.T. Revere, Susan Carroll, who just unfortunately passed away, a sparkling light there. And we were competing every day with the Arizona Daily Star. We would see that paper in the morning really early in the morning. And then it was like, oh my gosh, how did we miss this story? And would scramble to get it in. After about a year of that, I did worked as an assistant city editor. And then lured over to the bigger morning paper, where I got to cover my passion, politics. And that was great. I covered politics from Tucson, which I thought was the best of both worlds. At one point, the Star wanted me to move to Phoenix to cover state government full-time. And Ted, I couldn't think of anything worse than covering state government, legislature, the governor, and then moving to Phoenix. And in a ridiculous, self-righteous huff, I said, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm not moving to Phoenix. Cover state government? I couldn't imagine anything more boring. And I went back to the Tucson Citizen. And I did food reviews, restaurant reviews.
Now there's a switch.
Right. And I did that for about 6 months. This was in 2006, an election year.
All right. We don't need to go where you went after that yet, because I want to take we've got a little over a minute left. What was it from your time as a reporter that you've taken that's helps you in your roles you've had since then working in the political side of the world?
Curiosity. I being curious about people, this characteristic, this trait that I think I got from my parents, my mom especially, be sincerely interested in people and their story. And I think the ability to listen and hear what they have to say. In a congressional office, we deal with constituents who may have problems with federal agencies. We deal with cities and towns and counties. Being able to listen and to distill it down to its essence. To this day in our office, I'm thinking in my mind, what's the headline here? Not that we're going to make news out of it, but it's like, what's the bottom line? How do we get to what is really at issue? And I think that ability to think, it's like they say about going to law school, it teaches you how to think. I think being a newspaper reporter, knowing how to talk about a story in a way that matters to people, to make it engaging. And that's especially true when you're working for someone like Congressman Ciscomani.
Thank you, CJ. We will go to our bottom of the hour break.
Time's flying by.
It does. And when we come back, then we'll go into the political world you've worked in since 2007. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. See you after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the engagement hour. Matt Neely's behind the glass, keeping us on time and on target. Important Air Force terms. And our guest today is CJ Karamarjan. He's the senior advisor for Congressman Juan Ciscomani. You know, I always like to remind everybody that we are a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality.
Yep.
And with that comes some rights and some responsibilities. And for some, that includes service to our country. And for others, it includes service to our community. And the first half hour, we spent a lot of time on your history. Talked about your time as a news reporter after we got through your, what led you to that. And that really is a service to the community. People don't understand that sometimes, but it is. We can take a look at a lot of the jobs that we do, and we consider our jobs, our workplace. But they
First
they
Amendment,
quite often,
baby.
They yes, there it is.
It's first for a reason.
That's a very good point. Great lead in. So at the very end, you were telling us that you decided to report on food instead of go follow your passion of politics because it was going to require you to move to Phoenix,
exactly,
of all things, and cover the state legislature and the executive branch of the Arizona state government. So how did you then end up transitioning almost immediately from that decision from being a reporter to being a political advisor?
A lot of coincidence and irony and serendipity here, Ted. So I left the Star, went to back to work for the Tucson Citizen, writing about food. And I was, it was a congressional election that year. It was Jim Colby's last year in office. I was at the Star when he announced on Thanksgiving Day in 2005 that he wasn't going to seek a 12th term. Huge deal. Interrupted my the side dishes I was planning to make for a family Thanksgiving that day because we had to track down that story. One of the people I called the day before Thanksgiving to see if she would be interested to run was a state lawmaker named Gabby Giffords. Gabby and I had dealt with each other a little bit in my capacity as a political reporter for the Star. But when I went back to the Citizen, I stopped covering politics completely, and I watched politics play out from the newsroom of the Tucson Citizen. Interestingly, the person who replaced me as a political reporter at the Star was a young reporter named Daniel Scarpinato. The overlap here is...
It's almost getting scary.
It's too rich. So I went back to the Tucson Citizen, and after the election, I was in my cubicle one day trying to figure out another adjective to describe butter, and Mark Kimball, the editorial page editor, came up to my cubicle and said to me, Gabby is going to... She just won the election. Gabby's going to need a press secretary, you know. And I just looked at him, and he said, you should consider it. And I remember thinking to myself, Ted, why didn't I think of that? That is a brilliant idea. I ultimately did apply. And after 14, I was hired. After 14, 15 years in journalism, I went to the other side, the dark side, as we called it, as a reporter. And I can remember when they announced it in the Tucson Citizen newsroom that I was going to go work for our newly elected Congresswoman, Gabrielle Giffords, a reporter came up to me as we were eating cake and said, hey, CJ, I know you're a political animal and all, and you really like this stuff, but aren't you concerned that after 2 years you could be out of a job? I said, yes, I am. But honestly, it was a risk I had to take because when would I have this opportunity to like actually be in the room, to be in the arena, and to be a communications director for someone that I knew and admired? And there were only 435 members of Congress. To be a comms director, as we say, for one of them, it's like, this is unbelievable. This is an unbelievable opportunity. Interestingly, this was end of 2006. By 2009, the Citizen had folded, and it was...
You wouldn't have been reporting on biscuits anymore.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Worked for Gabby. It was an honor to work. It was an honor for to work for all of the elected officials that I've worked for. Gabrielle Giffords, Ron Barber was Gabby's district director at the time. I worked for Gabby until the till about 8 months after the shooting.
Well, before we go on to the, sure. the other elected officials you work for, I did want to talk about that. You became, when I was doing my research on this, when you became world renowned, there was everybody yeah. wanted to hear from you in that time. And obviously the tragedy, the law, the heartbreak, the loss that occurred at that event was not easy. Yet everybody wanted to hear how Gabby was doing, what was next, and you were the person, you were the voice. How did that impact you as you've gone forward, or was it just part of what you needed to do?
A lot of it couldn't have been, most of it couldn't have been done without a team, and that's true in every capacity. The one I'm in now, Juan has put together an amazing team in Washington and the district. But that teamwork, the ability to function as a team is critical. And right the days after the shooting, we had people come in from, one person come in from another office to help us. Mark Kimball, by that point, was on Gabby's staff then, doing great work in the communications team. It was the two of us. It's a lot of it, believe it or not, is a blur. The image that I took away that I still carry is it's you have to be kind of like the air traffic controller at LaGuardia Airport the day before Thanksgiving. There's planes need to, and this is an analogy you may relate to, planes need to take off and they need to land, and you have to make sure there are no accidents. And I honestly, Ted, did not realize at the time what was swirling around me until, I mean, I had a sense, but it was just nonstop. Going to Now Banner, which was set up into a memorial and a television studio. It was a strange combination of like a church, because you could smell the wax from the candles burning and people were playing music, but also there were bright lights of, you know, the Today Show and Good Morning America. And it was just this sort of surreal thing. It got to the point, at one point when I realized how amazing this, not amazing, that makes it, that's the wrong word. Just how momentous this
momentous is a great, and it was some amazing work that you had to do. You can't deny that. It's the focus for several days, followed by several weeks, followed by even to today. The story behind that story and the impact it's had needed to be told. That was your voice.
Yeah, and I think my experience as a journalist, as a reporter, working on Deadline, no doubt helped then. Two images, memories stick out. One was when Speaker Boehner said a couple of days after the shooting that he was talking about the deaths that tragically happened that day, and he said of my colleague, one of my colleagues who passed away, Gabe Zimmerman, a friend of mine, you know, an attack on one person is an attack on the institution. And I just lost it then. It was extraordinarily difficult. A few months later, as Gabby's condition slowly improved and there was tremendous interest in wanting to get the latest on her condition, and we had a picture of Mark Kelly, her, at the time, just astronaut husband, and Gabby. They were holding hands that was taken, I believe it was at the top heliport of UMC. And we wanted to release a picture to let people know that Gabby was okay. Gabby was on the road to recovery. And as soon as Mark Kimball and I hit send on this picture that we sent to the world, within seconds it appeared on CNN, and we have the TV screens above us, and we hit send, and then Wolf Blitzer, I think, this just in, a picture of Congresswoman Gabby Giffords and her husband. I was like, this is surreal. I can't even imagine this it's tremendous power. The power of media, the power of a story, and the power of that tragedy to remind people of so many things, including the nature of our discourse and how we talk and debate issues, because at the time that was raging.
There was still a lot of discourse back then, and I think Gabby was one of the ones that was a great example on the ability to work both sides of the aisle when necessary to get things done. So I'm going to take the break here so we can go to it early. I appreciate you sharing that story.
Sure.
It obviously is something that will always be dear to many of us, and it's going to be an impact that's impacts you every day. So appreciate
and our community.
Absolutely. Appreciate you sharing that with us. We're going to go to a break now. You've been listening to Jump in Tucson, 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Good morning, Tucson, and welcome back. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and you're listening to Jump in Tucson, the engagement hour. Our guest today has been senior advisor to Congressman Juan Ciscomani, CJ Karamarjan, and the this has really been about his story and a lot of his take and what we're going on. And so if some of you are waiting for us to get deep into the politics, we're going to continue down the political angle, and we may even talk a little bit about CD6. But sometime in the future, I will have CJ back on as we get more into the election season to talk specifically about his boss a little deeper. I do want to encourage you all to listen to Jump in Tucson tomorrow at 9 a.m. after you wake up with Chris DeSimone. Join Grant Krueger in the 9 a.m. hour, where his guest will be CJ Karamarjan. No, I unfortunately, I don't know who it is, but I figured I'd put CJ back on the spot just in case.
Uh-oh.
So after serving with Gabby up to the time when she turned the seat over, you then decided, enough of politics again. I'm going to go, and you went and worked for PCC. The community college.
A fantastic experience. And they were going through quite a bit of change at the time. There was a chancellor there who was sort of, I didn't know it at the time, on his way out. But I figured, okay, this is a great community college, helped change my life, as Congressman Ciscomani has often spoken about. It's changed his life. It changes countless people's lives. And I thought, okay, this is a great opportunity. I can continue to serve. I can be engaged doing media and government relations for Pima Community College. And I did that for a few years. And then I was a little bit bored. I kind of liked being in the arena. And a friend of mine, who actually was Gabby's scheduler, said, you should meet Martha McSally. She's great. I have no interest in ever going back. She goes, no, you have a beer with her. Go out and have a, just get to know her. I did. And we hit it off. And Martha and I got to the point where it's like, if I win this election, would you be interested? Yeah, maybe. What do you want to do? I couldn't think of anything. I've already been a communications director. I didn't want to do that again. And so I just flippantly said, I don't know, maybe district director. And that's the position, of course, she ultimately hired me for. And that was great, because I had never been in a position of overseeing an office like that, where we had caseworkers and an outreach team, and we put together these events that are very important, like Academy Day for high school kids who, like yourself, want to go to a service academy. This Friday, actually, Juan is having a celebration for the many appointees that he has made to Annapolis, West Point, the Merchant Marine Academy, and of course the Air Force Academy. And it's a great, it is just such a feel-good thing to know that we're helping kids who want to serve their country take this path if they want to do it. So I did that for Martha.
And real quick, Martha, what people, I want everybody to remember, is Gabby represented CD2 back in the day. It's now CD6, but effectively very, very similar districts.
Right. Part of
Jim
PIPA.
Colby before that.
Yep.
Gabby Giffords and Ron Butler had the position, and Martha beat Ron in an election, and she went into that very diverse district. So,
correct.
So when some people say, well, wasn't that a huge jump, CJ going from Gabby? No, it's the same district.
Yeah, for me, from the vantage point of wanting to serve my community, it was an opportunity to continue to do that. And it is an amazing district for Colby, for Gabby, for Martha. It was essentially the same, and then it got redistricted. Right now, the district is amazing. It's huge. It includes Pima, Cochise, part of Pinal, Graham, and Greenlee. It's a little bit different, a lot more rural areas, which is fun. It's a blast. But of course, Martha ran for the Senate. 2018, lost, was appointed to the position after the death of Senator McCain. I stayed with her in a Senate office, in the Senate office. Then after Martha lost to Mark Kelly, now Senator Kennedy, the guy who replaced me as the political reporter for the Arizona Daily Star, Daniel Scarpinato, was the chief of staff to Governor Ducey, called me up and said, "Hey, so what are you doing next?"
And so you, what you did then was what you told me earlier you left a job about. You did not want to go to Phoenix. You did not want to get work with the state legislature. And then?
It was the best move. Thanks to someone who's, this is why you should always be nice to people, because you never really know how they're going to affect the course of your life. In this case, Scarp saw in me, you know, potential to be a communications director for, I mean, Ted, there are 50 governors. This is a rarefied position. And for the entire time I was with Governor Ducey, I never lost sight of the fact that I would get into that elevator and I would press 9. And after swiping my security card to get into the garage, to get into the elevator, I would press 9. And I was literally going to the top of state government. And not a day went by where I didn't think, wow, if my dad, if my grandparents, my Greek immigrant grandparents could see me now literally going to the top of state government. And I learned a lot. Governor Ducey had an amazing team. He was an amazing leader, I think, who had a very disciplined and thoughtful and proactive approach to governance that I was honored to be a part of. And I, of course, worked with there someone who I got to know here, and that was Governor Ducey's senior advisor, Juan Ciscomani. So there are all of these areas where the Venn diagram sort of overlaps. You don't even realize it at the time, what path you may be taking.
So what was your biggest lesson learned from Governor Ducey's office and when your time working there?
Oh, there are many. The air traffic controller analogy was still true. You know, there were many things. You can never really be fully prepared for things like that. My first day on the job in Governor Ducey's office was the day he certified the election. And that ended up being a huge
controversy. And what followed not too long after that?
Yeah, well, many, many things.
Yeah.
I think one of the I think signature achievements of Governor Ducey, there are many, was his emphasis on the importance of teaching civics.
Yeah.
And this is something that I think everyone who worked for the governor's team, Congressman Ciscomani, his chief of staff, Becky Freeman, myself, we all took away. It was a learning experience that I think has shaped how we approach serving the people of Arizona's 6th Congressional District.
Civics is a huge issue that we support around here because it's all about what our rights and responsibilities are and what we need to do for the next step. So after Governor Ducey's term was over, you transitioned in to work with, as you said, your acquaintance at that point or your coworker, your partner, Juan Ciscomani.
Right. And even there, you know, one of the things that Juan does that is so passionate and he feels it so deeply is talk about the American dream. He has been to 3 naturalization ceremonies at the courthouse and one at Saguaro National Park, where he talks about the ideals of America that inspired him as the first immigrant from Mexico to represent Arizona in Congress. And that's civics. It's civics 101. And Juan Ciscomani is the living example of that. And so for me, it's just a complete honor to be part of that, to continue that journey, where we're talking about how people can get engaged and can jump in. Juan tells people at those immigration ceremonies, "I sat where you sat. I know what it's like." And within 16 years, he's a member of Congress.
Appreciate you sharing your story, CJ. Appreciate what you do to continue to impact our government and our policies, and look forward to having you back in the near future. So that was CJ Karamarjan.
It's an honor. Thanks, Ted.
Absolutely. The senior advisor to Congressman Juan Ciscomani. You've been listening to Jump in Tucson on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Have a great day.